Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Changing Tides podcast. In each episode, we invite guests to have honest conversations about their mental health journeys with the goal of destigmatizing mental health within the Asian American Pacific Islander community. Due to the nature of the podcast, we'll be discussing a variety of mental health topics and possibly triggering experiences. While we and the majority of our guests are not trained professionals, we encourage you to practice self-care while listening and seek professional guidance if you or a loved one is in need of support. With that said, let's start the episode.
My name is Megumi Wada. I am an art teacher at Locke High School in Watts. I've been there for about 12 years. I chose three words to describe my mental health journey. I'll describe them a little bit more as we talk, but I would say one word is transitional. The second word is alchemy. And my third word to describe my mental health journey is ongoing.
Hello, and welcome to the Changing Tides podcast. I am your host, Matthew Yonemura. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I just wrapped up recording with our guest, and I really loved this conversation. I was introduced to our guest today through one of our Changing Tides volunteers, and this volunteer has brought me two really great guests, and I love every guest, and, you know, it's just been cool when a volunteer with Changing Tides introduces a potential CT podcast guest, and I don't know the person coming in, and I just get to hear from them and have a really great conversation. This conversation is a little bit heavy, so with that in mind, I want everyone to know, going in, we have a little content warning that we do discuss suicide, we do discuss drug abuse, and we also do discuss rape. So if you want to proceed and listen to this episode, just take care of yourself and check in with yourself and maybe step away if you need to. We discuss it relatively early in the episode, and then some of the content warning conversation comes back near the end. So just be aware as you decide to listen to this episode or not that we do discuss these topics. But really great conversation with an art teacher in Southern California that I met through one of our volunteers. We talked on the phone a little bit. I believe that was last week before we did this episode, just so we could kind of get to know one another. But with that said, I'm really excited for you to hear our episode with Megumi Wada. Megumi, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We are introduced to you through Terry Koyanagi, who has brought me two great podcast guests now. So it's really awesome to be able to talk with you. And I loved the three words you chose. Often we have someone come in with a poetic like flow of a sentence, but I loved that you just like you chose three words specifically. And if you can break down why you chose those three words, I'd be grateful. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my first word was transitional. And the reason I chose that word was because just a little background, I have like the most incredible, loving, stable, secure family. I mean, being blessed is an understatement when it comes to my family. I mean, I know what love is to the fullest extent. I know what support is. I know what a healthy marriage is. They're still together 45 years. I mean, I am lucky. But, you know, my mental health journey began from trauma that had nothing to do with my family. And, you know, it turned into this spiraling and this numbing and this self-harm. But it has transitioned quite a bit to an understanding and a connection to myself, kind of like a necessary journey to lead me to like this space of self-love, like really true authentic self-love. So it kind of was like it went from something really bad to something really beautiful It's a total testament to the mental health journey that I've been on. I chose the second word, alchemy, because, alchemy is like the changing or transforming of something, right? And I feel as though like my mental suffering and my traumas and this journey as a whole has been a complete catalyst in my service of others, especially with teens. Because when I experienced my trauma, I was a teen. I know how hard that is that time. I am now using that to help many which have or are experiencing trauma right now. So it's kind of, yeah, it's just transitioned into this beautiful thing, and I'm using it to turn pain and turn heartache and turn trauma into healing for other people. And then I said ongoing because, life is ever changing, it's ever challenging, and I am ever evolving, even though I'm old. And I think it's always important that I am like hyper aware and prioritizing my mental health. And at any moment, life can throw you a curveball. And if we are not in constant connection with ourselves, we can miss signs that our mental health need attention. And I think it's also something that we have to keep working on, right? Like I know that it's something I have to constantly work on. And we have to actually train ourselves on a regular basis to advocate for ourselves and take care of our mental health, And I consider myself a true empath, and I think especially for empaths, it's really easy to forget ourselves, right? And so I consider this mental health journey of mine as something that I will be on, a journey I will be on till the day I die.
There go the dogs. They're cheering for how great your introduction was.
My babies.
There's so much there that I want to go through, and I wrote down some notes as you were talking. Part of the alchemy that you discussed was that we're now magically indoors.
Yes, I am an
So
alchemist.
yes, exactly. So by the way, it just popped in my head. The Alchemist was like the book, like was one of the huge books in like my approach to mental health when I read it. So that's a big recommendation to anyone out there who, if you haven't
For
read The
sure.
Alchemist, I love that book. But there's a lot I wanted to discuss, and I think it was one of the early things I latched onto was your discussion of, the appreciation for your family system and, growing up in a healthy household. That's something I could really
Yes.
relate to because, my parents are, I think it's such a blessing to have parents who are still married.
Oh,
And I
we're
don't,
so lucky.
it's like
Yes.
pretty unbelievable when.
Yeah, it's crazy. When I meet people like that, I'm like, you really?
Yeah.
We're unicorns.
And to see healthy love through your parents, it's such a magical thing to experience that I take for granted every day. But I think a piece of me, and I wanted to see if this is something that you could relate to, is as I experienced mental health and the ups and downs of it, I almost felt guilt because I was like, what do I have to be traumatized or to be
Yes.
experiencing when people have so much worse going on? And that goes down to just a family system. And it's like I didn't even want to bother my parents with it because it's like, why would I be experiencing this when people are in
Yeah.
so much worse situations? Was any part of like the early stages of like mental health or discussing negative emotions, was it difficult because of that, or did that make it easier for you to maybe have a discussion with your family?
I mean, in all honesty, it was always difficult because not because of the space and the safety of the space in my home, but because it was trauma induced, and there was so much shame associated. I can just go into it, but when I was in high school and I was 15, I was raped by somebody I didn't really know that well, an adult. And I was already kind of rebelling in a sense. Like I had been this really like good girl, you know. My mom dressed my sister and I in matching clothes, and we just did what we were told, and we're this cute little, you know, family. But as I started to become a teen, I realized like I have things inside me that need to come out. And so I started to rebel a little bit. And you know, just the typical hanging out with the wrong crowd kind of thing. And it ended up with me being put in that position, or in the, you know, becoming a victim to the situation. And it took a few months actually before my parents found out, and I didn't actually tell them. I told, it's so funny because when I think about it now, it's like I am this woman to so many others that this woman was to me. There was a woman, she was about 36 years old, and I trusted her and I told her. And she told my parents immediately. And part of why I am so blessed to have the family I have is because my mom just went into action immediately in terms of getting me services, mental health services, which is so interesting because she's from Japan. We have a lot of mental health issues in our family, like her family, her brother, you know, was suffered from schizophrenia, did in fact, you know, end his own life. So she, you know, but in Japan, it's not a thing, right? It's not, it's just, it's a thing. It's a real thing, but it's not a thing, right? People don't get help for it. So looking back, I'm just amazed at her. And she took me to every therapist under the sun until I found one that worked for me. But, you know, I think if it was for my family, I would be in a totally different place right now. I mean, completely different. I mean, it would have been, just would have been really bad. But, you know, that I'll say, I didn't just initially go into it with my parents. An adult had to intervene. But after that, my mom, she took care of it. I mean, she handled it. It wasn't like this girl's going crazy. Let's send her away to some, you know, boarding school somewhere, which I think my grandma suggested. My mom, you know, I feel like I'll fail if I do something like that. So she didn't, just made sure I got the help I needed. And it took a lot, but, you know, I did definitely attempt to end my own life, which sent me to the hospital during this time where I was in deep, deep suffering. But, you know, I think that also, in a sense, woke me up to needing to take care of this, right? And yeah, what's amazing is the therapist, my mom found me so many different therapists, and the one that actually stuck was the most unassuming. It's like Jewish guy. She took me to like artists and like these hippie ladies that were like, you know, draw a door and you know, like, you know, I was an artist, so she thought maybe that. And it's so weird. It's like this little, very conservative Jewish guy that really connected to me, and I actually still see him today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty unbelievable.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, and there's more with that I can talk about later, but yeah. So family for sure had a huge impact on me being okay.
Yeah.
The support system, you know, it's critical.
That's great. And yeah, I got chills when you mentioned, how you could play that role to someone now when, that adult in your life played such a huge role.
God, I've done it so many times now. It's
Yeah.
crazy. Yeah.
That's pretty
It's
unbelievable.
really amazing.
During this time of, your mom jumping into action and, the response to her learning of what happened, did was this even did it cross your mind that this was mental health at the time? Or
No,
right.
not at all. I mean, I was just in a space of chaos. I did not know what was going on at all. I just knew I wanted out of this mind, of this, these reoccurring thoughts, of this replaying of the event, you know, of the feeling of I mean, just feeling like I was worth nothing, you know, like I was just garbage. It was such a deep feeling of that, you know, that I had no idea. I was a kid. I had no idea what was going on. So I think it was until I attempted to end my own life and that I was hospitalized that I realized like something's up here, you know.
So what was that journey like of the discovery of, okay, so this isn't response to a traumatic event, which could be, you know, I think you could kind of can still consider that like general, like health and well-being, maybe, you know, it's response to something specific. It's not maybe in response to specifically mental health. So when you make that realization, you know, what's your how do you frame that in your mind? Like, what was it like when your mental health journey like began at that time?
I think I just realized like I have to work this out. I have to work this out. And it was really hard because and it's been hard my whole life because I'm raised in a home where I'm just filled with love, right? A home that's filled with love. I know in my mind my worth, my value as a human being, as a woman, right? I know I'm worth loving because I was extremely, but this event took all that away from my heart. So I didn't feel it, right? I knew it, but I didn't feel it. And I think that was always, and that wasn't something that I understood back then, but now looking back, that's kind of what my journey was about. Was it like I knew I was worthy, but I didn't feel like it. So I was trying to get to a point where I felt like it. And that took a lifetime. I mean, it didn't just happen. I mean, I definitely started, you know, really actively being in therapy and talking to my therapist more and being more open and more vocal about the things I was going through. And that really did help. And we moved to Japan in 1999, very shortly after all this happened. And that kind of gave me other things to think about and worry about in terms of the transition. And while I didn't continue my therapy there, obviously I didn't have my therapist, I had already kind of gotten to this place where I knew I wasn't in the same headspace, I guess, as this space of the self-harm and the drug use and such. So I felt like I was okay. Fast forward to like 2019, and you know, and up until that point, up until 2019, I mean, there was a lot of abusive relationships with men, a lot of unhealthy relationships with men. Almost all were unhealthy relationships with men. Looking back, I didn't actually love myself in the way that I needed to. And it actually took this long, it's weird to say, but in 2019, I kind of started to think more strongly about being in a healthy relationship and like what that meant to me and what that looked like to me. And I had this picture in my mind of the type of man that I wanted and you know, the type of relationship I wanted that mimicked my parents. And I just thought, you know, I have to be the person that can maintain that relationship. I have to be the type of woman that a man like that would want to be with. And, you know, you hear all these girls talk about what they want, and it's like, are you the person that is the person that should receive that? Like, let's work on ourselves, right? And so I realized. I looked back at all my relationships and I thought, you know, relationships are a mirror to how we feel about ourselves. And that was an eye opener because I realized that self-love wasn't there the way that it needed to be. It was much better, obviously, than it was right after the trauma, And I've done a great job. I have to give myself credit, but it wasn't where I needed it to be. And so I thought about the unhealthy relationship I had with sex based off of these things that had happened to me. And I just thought my only chance of having like a secure, strong, loving relationship like my parents had means that I had to really heal completely. And that I had to accept the fact that I hadn't. You go through life and you're just like living and things aren't terrible, right? So, but then, I just realized this is not what I want. So I cut men out of my life. I cut sex out of my life. I realized those were the areas of my life that were the most unhealthy. I had been in this job teaching and advocating for kids and helping kids and teaching, art through art therapy based project and such. So I was living in my purpose greatly, but there was this like void, I guess. And once I did that, I mean, my eyes began to open a lot more. I went back to therapy with this guy. He was ecstatic to see me again because he said, he's like, us as therapists, especially with troubled teens, we rarely get to see what happens. And he was so happy to hear what I was doing. And he even said, you're one of us, which felt really amazing. So I dove back into therapy. I really just worked on myself and, I started to really understand what the self-love journey is for a person. And I realized that, you can never make somebody feel something that they don't feel. You can't just tell someone to love somebody that they don't love, right? And that love is actually, in fact, action more than just a state of feeling. And so, because I came to that realization, I just started to think about the things that gave me joy, including going to therapy. It was an act of self-love, things that brought me joy. And I was just like, I'm going to just do the things that bring me joy. And maybe, just maybe, that will turn into love for myself. And man, it did. It absolutely did. Every day I did, I committed to it. And cutting out men, cutting out sex, things like that, it made me really open my eyes to that unhealthy relationship I had with it, the unhealthy relationship I had with myself. And so that was like a whole second stage of my self, like my mental health journey per se. And from there I created a curriculum for a homeroom class called the Self-Love and Leadership class. And it was geared towards girls just because, I mean, there's something to be said about having a group where it's just other young women, and same with young men as well. And I created a whole curriculum that's derived from like kind of discovery of self and seeing where you come from, how that affects who you are. And I mean, it's very similar to the way that I teach, but I had a class and they gave me that class and it worked. I mean, man, it worked. So I guess everything that I've done for myself, I tried my best to spread that to others, because life is hard.
So much to say in response, and I could only imagine your therapist when he heard from you, what, some 20 years later? That's like awesome. And
Yeah, he's great. He's so happy.
I think part of your journey of this passion for teaching and paying it forward, when did that start? When did you decide, like, oh, I think teaching and or art is something I'm really passionate about?
Well, always had a passion for art. I was really lucky. My mother always pushed us to make art. Even when we're younger, she'd always have colored pencils and paper everywhere we went. You know how kids have iPads now? It's always colored pencil and paper, always. excuse me, I was always urged to make art. It was part of my childhood, my part of my upbringing. But it really became my way of communicating my feelings in toughest times. It was my way to escape the world, my problems, even myself at times. And it was actually my way of showing the deepest parts of me that I couldn't freely share. So it's always kind of been ingrained in who I am. So art was always a thing. That wasn't the issue. It was, what am I going to do with that? Right? And I think because I was never like the type of artist that was like, I've got to show my work to the world, you know? It was more just like a way to heal. It was a way for me to take care of me, rather than a way for me to like put out, right? Which I think a lot of artists have, which is amazing. I'm jealous sometimes because I'm very sensitive about my stuff, so I don't really put it out. But because that was the case, well, when it came to how I became a teacher, I was living in Japan and I was teaching English. I started teaching English, as most Americans do when they're living in Japan. We get paid for that out there. And I'm talking about like having kids and saying like green, say green, right? Like I can do that. So I started teaching out there and I created my own textbook. It was really weird. I've never been an academic person. I hated school. But for some reason, I knew how to teach, which is interesting because my entire family is teachers.
Oh, wow.
My dad's sister is a teacher, 30 plus years. My grandmother on his side was a teacher. My grandfather's side, as well, on my dad's side, the women. A lot of them were teachers. It's just teachers everywhere. So growing up, because of my rebellious nature, I was like, I'm never going to be a teacher. That's the one thing I'm not going to do, right? It's in your blood. It's absolutely in your blood. Because I'll tell you, I'm the most impatient human being on the planet. I don't know why I can do it. And I can do it well. I have the patience when teaching someone something. And so once I kind of saw how naturally I was able to do this and how much I liked it, like for me to create an English teaching English like textbook of sorts was like, it just sounds so academic. It doesn't even sound like me. But I could understand how to teach English to Japanese folks. Like I could figure it out because I mean I was born with both, so I spoke Japanese, but I don't know what my it, like I said, it's in your blood. So I just knew how to do it. And once I started realizing that like I can do this, I like this, I enjoy this, I started thinking about my life. I started thinking about art. I started thinking about the world and how I wanted. I always knew I wanted to help the world. That was something that was like, non-negotiable. I was going to help. I was going to do something to help. And I just really began to feel strongly about this idea that art education is a way to heal our youth in the education system, and that there isn't any opportunity in school to do that. And we need that because you can't expect to have, people that are contributing to society in a positive way when they're carrying all this trauma with them, when they're carrying all these things with them, and they don't have the tools, they don't have the resources, they don't have the space to like take care of that, right? So I thought, I want to go into the places that need it the most and use art education as a way to heal people, or better yet, a way to teach people how to heal themselves. So kind of got long there, that
No, you tied two
answer.
of my questions into one, so it wasn't at
Okay.
all. Art And mental health has been something that like Changing Tides has been pretty passionate about from the beginning. Like
Awesome.
we did our first ever event, and then the first like after when the first one is what gave us our seed money to start Changing Tides. And then from that, our first like funded event was a paint night. So, art and has been
Wow.
something that Changing Tides has been really passionate about. But, did you know that art would have this impact on your students, or was it like,
I did.
oh, okay,
No, I knew. I
from
knew
the
because
very
of the
beginning?
impact it had on me.
Wow.
So I knew what it was going to do. It wasn't a question. It was just, how am I going to get in there? And is it going to be a problem for me to kind of implement art therapy as a part of my curriculum? Wasn't. They don't care. Thank God. Because art is a, there's these thing called benchmarks where, like, obviously each grade they gotta learn a certain amount of things. It's pretty much set for most subjects, right? Like chemistry, you gotta know these things. History, you gotta know these. World history, US history, you gotta know all the stuff, right? Well, I don't know about US history. They don't teach anything correctly there, but
No, they do not.
you know what I mean. But art, it's like there's just standards. Like, I don't know, formulate an opinion about some sort of art form and defend or change that opinion based off of the views of others. It's like general like that. So I thought this is great. And I built an entire curriculum with that follows those standards, but where the projects are geared towards, I guess, what I was saying earlier with the self-love and leadership class, like understanding yourself more, right? So I kind of basically what I try to do is any of the projects that I give, regardless. So, okay, one thing is, when you're dealing with a demographic like Watts, you're dealing with low socioeconomic status. You're talking about lack of resources, lack of funding, lack of money, lack of any, all of that, right? Poverty. And it's just, it's interesting because, and I was talking to the music teacher about this. As an art teacher, high school art teacher, you're prepared to teach this age group, but you're also prepared with an understanding that, like, they've probably taken some kind of art class, right? In their life before they're 15. 90% of my kids have never taken art, ever, which is just crazy, right? So while I'm teaching them different mediums and I'm trying to broaden their mind about different types of art, I'm also making all the projects based, art therapy based, meaning that there's an in-depth reflection of where they came from, how that affects who they are now, and who they want to be. That's a really important thing for me because when you're a teenager like that, you have no clue what the hell's going on half the time. And all the stuff in your mind is just noise that after you leave that time, you're just like, wow, none of that stuff matters, right? It's about, for me, them finding their truest self, right? Listening to their inner voice, channeling inspiration, things or experiences or people who impact how they see the world, things they want to say about issues that plague or affect them, and giving them this, like, really safe space to share their voice while discovering hidden parts of them or parts of them that have not been seen yet. So I'm always creating my projects with that in mind. So it's like, yeah, I'll teach you how to draw, but then you're gonna make something that's related to that stuff I just said. Right? So yeah, I mean, I know what making art can do, even if you're not an artist, even if you're not naturally creative. I know that it's healing. There's this quote by this, God, I think he's like a, I think it was like a Catholic author or something. I'm definitely not religious, but the quote was something along the lines of, like, art is a way to find yourself and lose yourself at the same time. And, yeah, it enables us to find ourselves and lose ourselves at the same times. And I think that I give that quote to the kids in the beginning of my school year, because it's not easy to find yourself. So many outside factors disrupt that journey, on finding your authentic true self, family, culture, peers, societal expectations, media, and sometimes we think we haven't even scratched the surface of like this beautiful complexity that is our individualism, right? And so I think knowing ourselves is also key to harnessing control of our mental health and our mental health journeys. That's kind of like the first step, right? Like having some sort of understanding. And also this losing ourself, as he says in the quote, is a gift that art gives, right? Whether you're making it or observing it, it's like we can leave our chaotic minds for a second and hone into something else, right? Like focus requires focus. And even if the focus is the basis of the chaos that we're making the art about, when we're making it, the noise has to quiet and the world actually does have to dissipate. And that is healing. And I'm talking about, and I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it. I have gang members in my classroom. I mean, deep in their art. I don't even care what it looks like. I tell them I don't care what your art looks like. I am not the all-knowing what is beautiful person. It's all subjective. Like if you're putting your heart into it, someone's gonna love it. They do. They feel good. And then they're always in my room and they don't leave me alone. So, I mean, I always knew this was a way to heal people. It healed me, so.
When when you have this very intentional approach to being an art teacher, incorporating art therapy, schools, when it comes to the arts, obviously the arts is on one low on the totem pole when it comes to funding. But similarly, it's like mental health resources tend to be near the bottom as well. So, similarly to how they come in with little to no art experience, there's probably not as much mental health discussion coming in as well. So, do you address mental health directly, or do you just sneak it in to your lesson?
I don't sneak it in. I absolutely address it directly. It's one of the first things I address. I am such an advocate for mental health awareness. So I don't feel the benefit in secretly talking about that. I think it's important that they know and that they see somebody that they respect and love, somebody that loves them, talk to them about it. And I share my stories with them. I talk about creating that safe space. In order for me to do that, I have to show them how safe it is by giving them me. And when I do that, and when I talk to them about my mental health journey, their eyes widen up. And we have a this thing called the Children's Institute. We have an amazing school psychologist. I love her so much. I mean, she's incredible. But there's a lot of paperwork involved with things at schools, and it becomes a little bit difficult, sometimes for kids to get services. But we have this incredible thing called the Children's Institute, and they offer therapists. And I am the queen of getting them that therapist. I'll tell you right now, I got a stack of those forms in my desk. It was funny because last year I gave so many forms out, and some of the kids that would get the forms, oh, here she goes with the forms again. Kids that are in therapy, they love it. They love it. I think, there's so many stigmas attached to therapy. A lot of it is cultural too. When you talk about people of color, mainly, like we're not about that. Shit is not that hard
And you
that
know
you need
what?
therapy, you know?
The fact that your students are like, it's kind of a joke. Like sometimes it could be like, uh-oh, that's the crazy kid who's getting the forms. But the fact that it's like commonplace and they're able to make a joke about like, there she goes with the forms, that's kind of, I think some people might see it as being kind of backwards or net negative, but I think that's like it's normalized if they're able to make it a
I
joke, you
try to
know?
normalize it. That's what I'm doing. I'm just like, I don't want it to be like a, you got to be crazy to get therapy. Like, no, actually, you just are going to always need some therapy. You're going to always need somebody. And they're just like, the first thing they say is, I don't want to tell nobody my business. And it's like, yeah, I know, but that's not what this is about. You know, it's not about telling someone your business. The therapist is not judging your business. The therapist is a vessel for you to share your things and ask the right questions so that you can sort out what's going on in your mind and your heart. That's really all it is. And I tell them that the reason it's a therapist and not your friend or your mama or your cousin or your auntie is because we care about those people. We care about what those people think about us. And when you care about what someone thinks about you, you are not going to share everything in the way that it needs to be shared for you to work it out. I found this image online where it was a person, and in their mind, it looked like thread, different colors thread. That maybe you've seen it, and it's all in a knot. You know how if you can, thread can get knotted up very quickly, right? So it's all different color threads, and then in the next box, they're sitting with their therapist, and it gets separated into the colors. And I tell them, like, that's literally what it is. That's what therapy is. It's the things that we carry in ourselves that we don't speak about, it doesn't do anything but become a huge knot. And it becomes harder and harder to undo that knot. So get it out. Get it out and figure yourself out. Life's hard. It's always going to be hard. It's not going to get necessarily easier, right? So, and I told them it's an act of self-love, you know, and, they believe me, man. I get so many kids therapists. It's like my mission. I always want to do that for them, and I always check in with them, see how they're doing with it. God, I got these kids, they're just like, I love it so much. Sometimes it's heavy. I tell them it's going to be heavy sometimes, you know. Sometimes therapy is not going to be easy. Sometimes you're going to feel heavier than you did before, but I'll tell you right now, it's going to feel lighter after you let that go. Because it's not carrying the same weight as it did when you weren't dealing with it. You know, I use this example with them too, especially I often have this conversation with the black boys. They have a lot of trouble getting the help. But I tell them, you know, it's like life, you're just carrying around this backpack in your life, and in your backpack you have all the experiences you've had, right? Good and bad. It's like fruit. Think about the experiences as fruit, right? I'm like, you're carrying this backpack of fruit. Some of the fruit is hella fresh, right? It's good fruit. It's nice fruit. It's love. And some of it is rotten. You know, some of us have more rotten fruit than fresh. Either way, though, what happens to a bowl of fruit when you got a moldy fruit in there, right? And they're like, the other ones get moldy. And I'm like, yeah, the other ones get moldy. And I'm like, if you keep carrying that backpack around with moldy fruit, every good piece of fruit you put in there is going to turn moldy. It's going to start. And then I said, for a while, it'll be fine. Just be in there. And it's going to start to stink. And then you're going to get flies. And people are going to see that swarm of flies and smell that stench. Same thing. We are human beings. We cannot take all of it on forever. It's going to come out. It's going to come out. And if we don't take care of what's in that bag and sort out the bad fruit and switch it up with fresh fruit, then we are going to, it's going to show. And how that's going to come out, who knows? But it doesn't smell good. And there's bugs. It's nasty. And they really do understand that analogy. They get it. So they get the services.
This you're so like if you were to put this in a nonprofit or in a social service agency lens, you're taking on the role of many staff members. in what you're doing. So, sorry, do you hear my printer?
No, I don't.
Okay. So you're taking on the role of many people here, and that's heavy stuff, you know, for every staff member at LTFC. You know, they have a support system, and you know, I say this all to say that you're taking on a lot. How, you know, how do you, as someone who you've already addressed, you're an empath, how do you stay level? You know, how do you show up every day for yourself and for your students?
Feeling like a rush of emotions when you ask me that. It's really tough. I try my best to fill my own cup, and I do it for the sake of everybody else. Of course I do it for myself too, but I do it so that I can be there for them. But it has actually taken a toll on my mental health. And it's interesting because this happened maybe about 2 years ago, where I started to really feel in this dark space, like almost like depressed a little bit. And I identified it right away. And I just thought, what the hell is going on right now? Right? Like, why am I feeling like this? And I talked to my therapist and he let me know about secondary trauma. And that, of course, instantly sounded like bullshit to me. I was like, secondary trauma? I'm not even the one experiencing the trauma, And he said, well, if you think about what trauma is about, it's something happening that has a lasting effect, right? That affects you later on. And he's like, when things happen to people we love, we carry that with us. He's like, you've been carrying 10 years of that with you. And I gave myself some grace and understood that, like, that's what this is. The heaviness, it has become overbearing for me. It has become, I've gotten to a point now where I've decided to take a step back from teaching after this school year. I have coworkers that I've been working with for a long time. They're like, you just got to scale back, you just got to scale back. And that's right. I do got to scale back. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to scale back. I don't know how to close my door during lunch and not let any kid in. I don't know how to not call a kid out of class that I know is going through something because I saw him earlier being different. I don't know how to not put 150% of my heart and soul into these babies. I don't know how to do it. And I guess, he's absolutely right. You have to find that balance in order to keep going. And I don't have that balance, I guess, right? And so I've decided I need to take a step back just to figure out how to have that balance, or if I can have that balance, or in what ways that can maybe I can transition or but it's been like the toughest decision I've ever had to make because, and I think that's why I'm getting emotional thinking about it, is because like I feel like this has been my purpose and this has been such a source of pride for myself in a sense where I know I'm making a change, right? Like I know I'm doing something good. I know I'm doing something beautiful for the world. And I know that in a bigger sense, I'm making this world a better place because these kids are freaking amazing. And once they get a moment to just deal with whatever they're carrying with them, the light that shines from them is so bright, right? It's just so bright. And I just want to be able to offer that to every child, right? As many as I can. And so to think that I'm at a space now where that's kind of difficult for me to do, it really does break my heart, so I'm interestingly talking about mental health. I'm in this interesting space right now where I'm being forced to focus on my mental health in a way where, I never thought I would have to. But you know, the things that I carry with me, the stories that I carry with me, the things that the kids tell me, and because I guess I've created that space for them to share, some of the things are unimaginable. You know, things that you can never forget hearing. You know, just, I mean, all the things are coming to my mind right now, all the stories that I've heard and the times that I've had to call Child Protective Services because I am a mandated reporter. Even that being something that I fear doing because sometimes that could just ensue more chaos in a home of abuse, stories of torture, stories of, you know, so much sexual and physical abuse. Drug abuse, parental prostitution, you know, just things like that. And I guess I'm such like a go type of person that I don't think about how heavy that is on me. But I got to the point where it is. It just it's too heavy now. So I need to step away. Like I said, that hurts me very much to have to do, but I'm hopeful that I will find some way to balance being able to continue this purpose of mine. But yeah, makes me sad. Makes me sad thinking about, but or even saying out loud, but.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate thing is what you're doing is so healing and so powerful, but it shouldn't have to only be you or you and the school psychologist. You know, there's so much more that should have been done beforehand where there is this weight on your shoulders to take on again, you know, similar to LTSC, how many employees we have and social work staff. There should be the same thing for these students. There should have been so much more that was in place before the teacher needs to step in. So it's kind of the pushing the rock up the hill, you know, like I don't want to make that analogy because you have made more impact than just continuing to push the rock up the hill, like you've made
Well,
real
no,
impact.
I understand what you
Yeah,
meant.
yeah. It's just like it's a continuous cycle. You know, there's been such a profound mental health impact that you made on students. And I'm wondering if you know of students who you've made other impacts in regard to just like discovering art and maybe that's a field that they pursue or whatever it might be. But like, has there been any other impact you've seen the art make on students?
I mean, yeah, just in terms of like, I have this art show that I do every year, and it just actually happened. Last Friday was the opening. We saw almost 100 people came, alum, my family, friends, just all kinds of people came. I do it every year. This is my fifth, I think, sixth one. It's called Say Something. And, that's what they do. They talk about social political issues that affect them the most. And this is, I think, the one thing that does take quite a toll on me. It starts by us talking about all the social political issues of the world and our homes as close to in our own minds and stuff. And we, you know, they figure out what they want to talk about. They make sketches for it. They get and a lot of them, the beginning part is the hardest because they're having to address issues that they've never spoken about. So they're actually having to identify, like so many talk about mental health. It's not even funny. I mean, anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, things like that. And for most of them, they've never spoken about it. So they understand that at the end of this, the whole school is going to see it. So they have to gain that courage. They start by sharing it with each other and getting feedback, and it's nerve-wracking for them. I make them find an unconventional canvas. So I make them go out and find trash and turn it into treasure, kind of like what I did with the things that have happened to me and what I'd like them to do with what they're talking about. And they create these incredible art pieces, and there's got to be some sort of solution on it. And what has been amazing to watch in all the years that I've done this is a lot of them that speak about mental health issues aren't getting mental health services, and they start to get them while creating these art pieces.
Wow.
Not even that, when they put their art pieces out and the kids come to see it, the whole school will come. I have them write these. God, it's my dog. He's like, let me in. What they do is I have a critique sheet, kind of like a critique sheet where you can anonymously write to the artist and tell them what you liked about their project, what impacted you about it, etc. And it's like a, on all ends, you know, these kids write to the artist and say, you're inspiring me to get services, mental health services. And then the artist gets to read that and feel like they've really paid it forward, right, through their art. So this art show has been one way for kids to really see and feel the impact that art can have on themselves and essentially the world, right? Like, it can change the views of others. It can make other people inspired to take care of themselves or to love themselves. And I, you know, when we come back, we will all sit in a circle and we're going to talk about this journey together. And every time we do that, it's tons of tears and it's tons of this realization that, you know, just by being authentic and true and making art, that they have the power to really like heal themselves and heal other people. So that's one thing that's like, it's like in your face that it's helping. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's in my face. Like, I can see, they can see. It's undeniable.
Yeah.
And the school can see too. You know, and they have a voice audio statement where they, so basically you can walk around and listen to the children explaining their art. I will actually share you that link that I have for it so you can hear some of it. But yeah, so there's just this really strong moment of connection with the artist, with these kids, with what they've been through. And
yeah,
so that's just one of the things. Then you also get these, you know, these kids that the whole school wants to pin as bad, bad kids, you know. I got kicked out every single second. And where did they come? My room. And what do I make them do? Make some art. And they'd rather do that. Kids that you would never think would be making art.
Right.
You know, kids that are like on their Instagram with guns and stuff after school.
Yeah.
They're in my class, in my next to me on my desk, making their little tattoo design because that's what lesson we're on right now.
Wow, so, that's amazing.
Such a healing thing.
We have talked about so much, and I wanted to see if there's anything, because I have some sillier, fun questions to end things.
Okay.
But do you have anything that we didn't touch on or anything you'd like to expand on before I get to the last few questions?
I mean, no, I mean, I feel like I've talked so much. I want parents. I wish there was a way for me to get to parents, you know, and talk to them about just supporting their kids' mental health journey and like getting their kids services, being okay with their kids getting services, because it's okay that you're not the one that they're coming to. Like, it's going to be okay, you know, like just help them learn how to get those services for themselves and also for them to get the services for themselves. You know, I try so hard to do that, but we don't really have a lot of parental involvement. So I think that's huge, you know, when a kid needs something and their parent is just like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
Other than that, yeah, I mean, I feel like I touched on so much. I talked about so much today.
Well, I want to thank you for your time and for, being so vulnerable.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you felt safe in the space to share everything. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I will take a turn to some of the fun, silly questions.
Okay.
First of which being, if you could invite three people to dinner, dead or alive, who would they
Oh,
be?
God. That are alive?
Dead or alive, yeah.
Oh, dead or alive.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Frida Kahlo. For
Okay.
sure. First. She's the queen of expressing, right? In art, so much pain. She didn't make art to be pretty, right? She made art to show how she felt. And I really resonate with that in terms of, what I do with the kids as well. Oh, God, that's a hard question. So many people are running through my mind. My grandma, she passed away, and while I was getting my master's for teaching, and she was always very worried about me. I think when she understood that I was going to be a teacher, I mean, she was so happy, and she was kind of losing a lot of her cognitive, being there. There's so much I wish I could have asked her about teaching and about. She did it for like so many years. I mean, her whole life. And she was a very high up there in the California Retired Teachers Association. She was so involved in teaching. I mean, so I wish I could talk to her about this stuff. That is for sure. And James Baldwin. I am a very much a activist for social justice, and there'd be no price on a conversation with that man about social justice, or just even just about anything in general. So there it is. Frida Kahlo, my grandma, and James Baldwin.
What's on like your first things to do list when you do step away from teaching?
Hiking.
Hiking.
Hiking with my dogs.
Nice.
I love it. I love going out and being like away from everything. I think there's something really powerful, at least for me, about being able to kind of step away from everything and look down at the world that I'm sucked into all day and to get away from that for a moment.
It sounds like they heard the word hike and
God, give me a word.
they sound
Sorry.
excited. What form of art would you like to try that you haven't before, if there is anything?
I mean, I would like to.
Or something you haven't done in a long time that you're like, oh, if I have more time, I want to dive back in.
I mean, just finding time to do art and in general is really tough because it's something that takes 4, 5, 6 hours, right? I mean, I lose myself, like that quote said, I really lose myself. And while it's the most healing, most wonderful thing that I love more than anything, to carve out that time for yourself, knowing that it's going to be that much, is really hard. So I think just painting in general is something I just love to do all the time. I would love, if my next chapter had something to do with, creative director kind of work, curating spaces, curating installations, jewelry design. So those sort of things are things I am very interested in. But I'm
Awesome.
just working on carving out that painting time for myself. Just to,
Right.
I always feel better when I do that. So I've got to work on that.
To round it out, if you were to have an autobiography, what would you title it?
Oh, geez. An autobiography. God, Matthew, really? What would I title it? Do people just answer these questions off rip?
Sometimes people need to think about it.
Oh, I feel like this is something I'm going to answer on later on. I'm going to be like, God, it's such a better one that I just thought of right now.
If you want, you can think about it and send me a little voice memo with your title, and I could
Okay.
insert that. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, I want to do
Okay. Okay.
that.
Think about it, and I'll insert your
Okay.
title here.
The title of my autobiography would be Rebirth and Repeat. And I think the reason why I would choose that title is because my life has been very much about allowing parts of me to die, in a sense, in order for new parts of me to be born. And this constant rediscovery of who I am, parts of me that I never knew existed, parts of me that are kind of coming about throughout my life, is something that I take pride in and I take joy in discovering. So, yeah, rebirth and repeat.
Okay.
Okay, a voice memo.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm going to think about that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Megumi, for your time. It was great to
Thank
talk to
you
you.
so much. This was
So great.
wonderful. Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of so much. I just, get a chance to talk about this stuff so
Yeah.
often, all the things on my heart. So I really appreciate this time and
Yeah.
great questions.
Thanks. Thank you so much to Megumi for being on the podcast. Such a great conversation, and I was so appreciative of how vulnerable she was with this episode. I think it was really great, and once we stopped the recording on Zoom, we chatted for a little bit, and I was really happy to hear that Megumi said she felt lighter once we were done talking. You know, I think for me, when I go to therapy, by the end, I feel heavy and tired and fatigued because so much is discussed. But I was really happy to hear from Megumi that she felt light after we recorded, despite all the different things we discussed. So, if you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to our show for episodes that release every other Tuesday and give us a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform. If you would like to support our podcast and help us grow, you can do so with a donation to the link at the bottom of the episode description. And to hear more about Changing Tides, follow us on Instagram at LTSC underscore Changing Tides, or check out our website, thechangingtides.org. Let's continue to change the tide on mental health. Yeah.